you so much for coming. About, oh man, like 4 or 5 years ago, I was walking across. I had a very lovely morning. We did yoga that morning and my whole spiritual practice, did all my prayer work, all prayed up, and walked out of the house just thinking I was on my way to meet the person I was working on a children's book with. They were the photographer crossing First Avenue at 53rd Street on the green with like 20 other people, and got hit by a red delivery truck. And what's so interesting is that in all of my time with Carol Logan, who is like the fastest walker in the universe, and I'm always, you know, 20 steps behind her, it's like, babe, we're out on walk together. So she's going to slow down. I got to speed up. This has been happening. It's the oldest story in the book. On that day, and only on that day, I was walking in front of her. That's never happened, ever. Not one day in 20 years has that ever happened where I was walking faster than her. Why? Because the truck obviously had my name on it. I'm going with 20 other people, and it had my name on it. It hits me, and I bounce, and I land on the ground, and I watch from the ground in this otherworldly state. I watch catwalking running down the street after the truck because they didn't even know that they had hit me. And I see her running down and flipping open their door. I mean, I watch all the fury of her coming out like, rah! And I'm watching this going on. And it really didn't seem like it had anything to do with me at all, because I was happily laying on the ground in First Avenue of however many lanes of traffic there are. And all these people stood around me, all these strangers just stood around me, what you might call angels, those angels that show up in your life so that the cars not seeing me wouldn't run over me. Why do I tell you this story? Obviously not for the pity effect, although, you know, feel free. Yeah, of course, I didn't hear one awe, not even one. Yeah, thank you, 6 minutes later. So that night, I'm in bed, and it was interesting, because when the experience happens, we went to the hospital, and then they let me out later that afternoon, then I went home, and I felt I was full of the adrenaline that happens after something like that, and I thought, wow, okay, this was an experience, and I know it's a spiritual one, and I can get over it, and, you know, Spirit's trying to tell me some blah, 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 blah. The next morning, I opened my eyes, and I couldn't move any part of my body. Literally, I could not. I tried to lift my head, and I could not lift my head out of bed. I finally felt the impact of that truck that morning. Of course, I burst right into tears, like, oh, shit. This is now. What if I'm paralyzed? You go, what if? And I'm laying in bed. I can't move a muscle, not anything. Later that day, our wonderful chiropractor at the time, who was living in New York, came over. He made a house call, and this is what he said to me. I said, oh, man, I totally can't move. And he said, you're going to need to move, because anything in life that doesn't move or that stops moving dies. And I will never forget that sentence. And obviously, he could see I couldn't move. I mean, I just couldn't move. I got hit. I felt it the next day. I couldn't move. And he was saying, move. He was saying, move, and you got to move, and you better move. Because anything in life that doesn't move dies. So move. When we are in our lives, every last one of us is going to come to a place that is a turning point in their life. And it's not going to come when you expect it. It's not going to come on a certain day, like you open your calendar and today's the day you're going to be dealing with thus and such. It comes when it comes. It happens when it happens. It is not ever when we think it's going to come, not ever as we expect it to come. And they always come. And we're always surprised. The thing about being alive is, according to my chiropractor, We have got to keep moving forward. And when we stop moving forward or want to stop the clock from moving forward or want to stop life from moving us forward, we actually think that we can. But the thing about turning points is we can't. When we have outgrown to the day, to the minute, to the second, when we have outgrown where we are, life is going to come knocking on our door and push us forward like a plant taking us out of, as I talk about in the hero's journey, taking us out of the pot we're in and moving us into a bigger pot. Why? Because we've outgrown the old one. And what we do so naturally with plants. If you haven't heard The Hero's Journey, please download it for free off of my website. Please, it's a talk about outgrowing the places where we are. And we wouldn't think twice about weeping and gnashing our teeth over transplanting a plant that's outgrown its pot. But man, when life tries to transplant us, it's a whole different story. It's like, poor me, I can't believe this is happening. What I do to deserve this? I'm being punished. And what it is you've overstayed your welcome in the smaller pot. It doesn't come as a surprise when we're honest. I remember in a breakthrough class, a man stood up and said, yeah, well, I hear everything you're saying, but you know what? I got fired from my job. Explain how that happened for me. And I said, did you love your job? He goes, well, I didn't exactly love my job. I said, well, did you like your job? He said, well, I wouldn't say I actually liked my job. And I said, how long haven't you liked your job? He said, well, I knew 3 years ago that, you know, if something better came along, I'd take it in a second. When you drill down beneath your surprise at something happening in your life, you will discover that you weren't blindsided at all. That deep down inside the change where life is telling you it's time to move on out of this smaller experience into a bigger one, we were already in some way uncomfortably stuck in a place we didn't know how to get out of, or uncomfortably stuck in a place we were too afraid to get out of. So life gives us that push. And it gets more and more uncomfortable to stay in the old place. That's the problem. If we'd be comfortable in a place that's too small forever, we'd be in a place that was too small forever because we'd be comfortable. The problem is the discomfort begins to grow so great and so painful, it actually outweighs the fear of making the move into the new. And a turning point is a really interesting moment. A turning point is a moment where you have the opportunity to handle that experience in your life one of two ways. And there are many turning points in our life. Marriage is one. We always think turning point, something negative. Marriage is a turning point. Divorce is a turning point. Having children is a turning point. Losing a child is a turning point. Losing a parent, turning point. Being evicted, turning point. Ending of a love relationship, turning point. Being in debt, turning point. New job, new career, turning point. End of a dream, a turning point. There are illness, our own, turning point. Facing our own death, turning point. What's interesting about turning points is everybody in the human race is going to face one, if not all of these, at different points in their life. And we have got to come to a place in our life where we are cool with them. We don't have to love them. And if we can't raise our hand in celebration for them like some people do when they've been drinking too much, apparently, I'm so glad this turning point is it. We don't have to get there, but we do have to come to an understanding with them, and we do have to get cool with them. Because if we're not cool, whenever a turning point happens, and it will if we're in the human race, and it will if we're in skin, We're in skin, it's going to happen. Until we get cool with it, we are so going to freak out when they come. We are so going to handle them poorly and unwisely and ineffectively when we come. We will react as if we're the first person on earth who's ever had an experience like this. We will freak. When in fact the turning point is truly no different than life helping you out of this place of stuckness that you have outgrown and moving you into a place where you have more room to move. No matter how much you love a plant that's in a pot that's too small, you can love it, you can water it, you can feed it, you can give it miracle grow, you can kiss its leaves, you can talk to it telepathically when you're at work. I love you, I've never seen a plant like you, I love you. You can do all these fabulous affirming things and the damn thing's still going to die. Why? Because in a pot too small, it can't grow and it can't move. And after a while, that which is in life that doesn't grow and doesn't move dies. Not because we're being punished, not because we have bad karma, not because we don't tithe and give to charity. It dies because that in life which doesn't move and doesn't grow dies. That is a law. It's a law. And a turning point is an opportunity for growth. That's all it is. It's an opportunity to deepen and expand. It is an opportunity for more of you to be taken out of hiding. For more of you to express yourself in the world. It is life's way of saying you have completed the journey up until this point. You have filled the pot that you're in. You have gone as far as you can go. Let's take you and let's move you to this next place where you actually can have some room to grow. And we think we're grown enough. Thank you very much. Because we know that with growth comes discomfort, and we know we love our old pot even if we hate our old pot. We love our old pot or our old man or our old relationship or our old home. If it means we have to leave it, we love it. What do they say about the kids who are taken out of abusive homes? You know this story better than I. They had a picture of a child being torn out of the arms of his mother who abused him. And the social workers trying to pull him away. You've probably seen that photo. It's one of the most famous photos that seared itself in my mind. We love what hurts us because it's ours. It's ours. And even if it hurts us, it's ours. We can't imagine in our minds something better than what we have. It hurts, but it's familiar. It's too small, but it's familiar. We don't get any respect, but it's familiar. We're not making a living anymore, but it's familiar. We're in debt because of it, but it's familiar. We stay in that pattern because it's familiar, and there is comfort in the thought that we have control in some area of our life, even if what we have control over is hurting us or making us unhappy. What do we discover in the 12-step programs? That your addictions are your hiding places. And you're hiding out. It's a marvelous hiding place. You're hiding out until you're ready to step out of the smaller pot and come out of hiding and begin to do what? The one thing life asks you to do, grow. Let me grow you into your wholeness. That is the teaching of all teachings, life wanting to grow you into your wholeness. I mean, we can go back and look at the archetypal story in Exodus. The archetypal story that seems like, well, it's this time of year, it's Easter and it's Passover, and this isn't a church, but I got to tell you, if we were to look at one story that speaks to turning points, we have got to go back at this moment in time and look at that story. Because when Moses came for the people of Israel and said, hey, I got you free. It's happening. We worked it out. You were slaves for 450 years, and guess what? Today's your lucky day. You're getting out. It's like a get out of jail free card. You would have thought that every single person would have gone up and kissed this man's feet for what he had done, the way he worked that out with God to get him out of you, just kissed his feet. And that's not at all the reception. Do you know the root of the word Egypt is constriction, is confinement? Everything about that story is about bringing ourselves out of bondage. And when we talk about turning points, the thing we're talking about tonight is that what every one of them has in common is that every one of those stories is about our coming out of bondage, coming out of hiding, coming out of constriction, coming out of compression, coming out of a place where we are fettered, where we are shackled, where we are in bondage, coming out of that place and moving to a place of freedom. And you think we'd be dancing like a hora, you know, about that for those three Jewish people who know what a hora is, right? Right? You would think we'd be dancing once we discover how to come out of bondage and how to come out of bondage and slavery into freedom. And so he came to these people. There's 600,000 people in slavery for 450 years. Man, talk about a smaller pot. You would have think they would have been ready sooner than that, don't you? When they were finally ready, when Moses came to them and said, let's get ready, it happened in a moment. The turning point always comes and you never expect it. It's always a surprise. The reason they eat matzah, the reason you eat matzah on Passover, which matzah is unleavened bread, is they didn't have time to leaven their bread. That's how fast they had to leave Egypt. They had to leave in such a hurry. They had to leave in the middle of the night. They had to leave unprepared. And that is literally what begins to happen. When a turning point happens, there's a moment that comes when you know it's over. This relationship you've been trying to make work, over. The job that's not working, over. Somebody talking down to you and down to you and down to you and you not being able to speak your truth. There comes a day where you just have had it. It's over. There comes a day where you can't take another drink, another drag, or another drug. It's over. You're done. And it happens in a moment. Years of suffering went into it, but in that moment, in the dark of night, out of nowhere, seemingly, you can't take one more step. And all turning points come. They turn, and you're in it. There's no time to prepare. There was no time to leaven their bread. There was no time to prepare. They took what they had with them, and they fled. 600,000 people, imagine, 600,000 people fled, left in the dark of night to get away. A turning point happens, and they were ready in consciousness to be free. There's a moment of freedom, an opportunity that life gives us to get free, to leave one pot and go into the next. We can go kicking or screaming. We can go kick it. We're gonna go kicking or screaming. It's gonna happen despite us, or we can understand what the turning point is and join the flow of life as it is moving us fluidly to the next place where we belong. Because these people weren't born to be slaves, and neither, by the way, were we. We were not born to be enslaved in a marriage that doesn't work, in a job that doesn't use us, in a home that doesn't reflect us, or in a body that is so sick it cannot give us the joy and allow us to live fully. We were not born to be in bondage. I mean, do you remember Plato's allegory of the cave? Think back to high school, which might be a lot of years for some of you, and maybe not so many for others. You remember Plato's allegory of the cave? People closer to high school, do you remember? Young people. Does nobody remember Plato's allegory? One. Yes. Thank you. One person took his philosophy class seriously. Right? What's the allegory of the cave? The allegory of the cave is, it is a fictional conversation that Plato writes in his book, Republic, his most famous book of his philosophy and ideas. And what he proposes in the allegory of the cave is, he says, imagine, if you will, there are all these people sitting on the floor of a cave, and they're chained there, chained, bound, right? Fettered, bound, compressed, held against their will, in bondage. They're chained to the ground, and they are facing the wall of a cave. Now, they're facing the wall of a cave, but behind them, they can't see this, behind them, at the far end of the cave, is a fire, a beautiful big fire, a hearth. And in front of that fire is a stage where people are going back and forth. But the people who are on the ground, chained to the ground facing the wall, they can't see what's behind them. They can't see the fire. They can't see the human beings behind them. All they can see is the reflections on the wall. They can only see the shadows because they're facing forward and they're looking at the shadows. And after a while, they begin to believe, Plato says, they begin to believe that what they're actually seeing is life. Really, what they're seeing are the shadows on the wall. Really, what we're seeing, he says, is the shadows on the wall. And when we see the shadows on the wall, we don't know that there's a fire back there. We don't know that we're seeing shadows. And if we turned around, we would actually see the people behind us, and they're actual people, not shadows. In fact, we could go further. We could take the shackles off. We could get up, we could turn around and see the people and the fire, but we could also see that there was an exit, and we could walk out the exit and up out of the cave and realize that the fire is not the source of the light. It is in the cave. The sun is the source of all life, but we got to get out of the cave in order to see it. And he said, you would think people would be so happy that once they realize the sun is out there, once the first person takes himself out of bondage and realizes, oh my God, it's the fire, we're looking at shadows, then runs up out of the cave and says, oh my God, here's the sun. Of course, it's going to hurt his eyes and it's going to be difficult to see. You're going to think you're blind because it's so bright. But after a while, you get acclimated. Once you see the sun, the first thing he's going to want to do, this guy, is go right back down to the cave and tell everybody, listen, take your shackles off, get up there. Hey, take your shackles off, get up there. Hey, take your shackles. That's what you're going to. And he says, you'd think everybody would want to celebrate that guy, to kiss his feet and say, oh, you brave man, thank you for telling us. We've been looking at freaking shadows all this time when actually we could be in the sun. And he said, here's the truth. Nobody wants to hear that truth. Nobody's interested. If somebody happens to get out, good for him, but he can't go back in and tell people about it because people aren't going to believe him. People aren't going to want to believe him. Moses takes this huge group of people into the wilderness to get out of Egypt. And here's an interesting line. He takes them out of Egypt via not the usual land that they go over. He took them into the wilderness. It's a much harder journey going through the wilderness than it is going over land. Why? Because as the story says, and this is the myth from the Old Testament, as the myth says, the Great Spirit, or God, said, if you bring them over land and not in the wilderness, they're going to see that there's war going on. And then they're going to change their mind. And then they're all going to want to go back to Egypt. So take them in the wilderness where they don't see it. We're cowardly because it's scary. A turning point is taking us out of the life we know, even if it's the life we hate. We know it. Even if it's the man we know and all of his habits we hate, we know him. It takes us out of a place we know and deposits us into a place we don't know. That's the problem with a turning point. You are turned on a different direction. You have no idea. And by the way, hello, no guarantees. All right? No written guarantees that, okay, you're going to make a move, but I'm telling you, I promise you, it's going to be fabulous on that. Nobody tells you. You have no idea. And understand that a turning point, in order to open to something new, something has to die. We really have to understand why it's so hard. Bravery doesn't mean you just dive in and do it. Bravery means you're doing it, and you have your fearfulness too. But you know what it is to be afraid of, and you know what it is that you don't need to be afraid of. See, what happens in a turning point is you don't have anything to hold on to. And we have this false sense of comfort and confidence when we think we're controlling something. And when do we think we're controlling something? When we're holding on to something. We know what it is. We know what the old pot is. We know we can't move. We know we're stuck. We know the juices aren't flowing in us anymore. The light's gone out in our eyes. We can see it for ourselves. Thank you. Nothing is really working. We're stuck. And it's like, how'd I get here? This was not the vision I had for myself. We end up just stuck in something. Now, if we walk down the path of victim consciousness, we're going to say, why did life do this to me? And there is no answer to that question because it's the wrong question. The only answer that you're going to get to that question is poor you. The question you ask that you'll actually get an answer to is, why is life doing this for me? Because in every one of the solid teachings that we talk about all the time, especially the Tao Te Ching, life is a movement, all of it, a movement toward your wholeness, toward your perfection. In other words, toward your greatness. That's where it's taking you. That's what it's about. It's about one thing, your growth, your movement into your greatness, your greater self, period. Period, period. Man, that is a line to memorize and use as a mantra. But it's one line that changes the game because we stop asking the silly question, why is life doing this to me? Why is God doing this to me? Why is this happening to me? The to me question will take you to a dead end. And you'll grow, but you'll grow smaller. And that's what a turning point offers us the opportunity to do. We have two ways to grow. Either way, we're going to grow. I'm telling you, either way, we're going to grow. We're either going to grow bigger or we're going to grow smaller. We're going to grow greater or we're going to grow littler. We're going to grow more in love or we're going to grow more bitter. One of the two things is going to happen at every turning point in our life. So they're in the wilderness, they get out of the wilderness, and they end up in front of what we all know from the story is the Red Sea. They end up in front of the Red Sea. They lift up their eyes, they turn around, they hear something, and what do they hear? They hear 600 chariots behind them chasing after them. This is the story. And this is not about them. This is about our exodus, and we need to understand that this is a universal archetypal story. It has our name on it, and we make this exodus not once in our life. We make this exodus every single time a turning point happens. That's why the Course in Miracles says a really interesting line. It says, you must make the decision for heaven. And if we take the root of the word heaven, the root of the word, take all the idea of heaven is a place with the singing virgins and all that nonsense out of the way, just get that right out of the way, because I'm not even going to talk about that silliness, okay? Get all that and the harps and the angels and what's up there and the pearly gates, all gone, white slate, clean, here we are. The Greek root of the word heaven is expand. It's a state of mind. It's a state of being. It's a state of consciousness that is expanded. And in our expanded consciousness, what do we know? We know who we are. We know what life is. We know that all of life is a movement toward our wholeness, and we know that we're connected to that movement. We know we're connected to that wholeness. It's not separate from us. It is us. In that place of heaven consciousness, expanded consciousness, we're not afraid. Why? Because we know that every single thing that's happening, every single thing without a single exception, is happening for our greater good, capital G, for our expansion, for our movement into our fullest expression of who we are on this earth. That's why we are here. And when we know that, we might have butterflies. I've been speaking for 20 years. There's not one time I'm not in that back room without butterflies. You're still going to have butterflies no matter how much you do what you do. When you are at a turning point, you're always going to have your butterflies and your nerves, but you're not going to have the dread and the paralysis that comes with, hell no, I'm not moving. You'll have to drag me out of here by my feet dead before I move from this small pot. They're standing there looking at the Red Sea in front of them, and they are looking at the Egyptian 600 chariots making their way to them to kill them. We think we have problems. Right? Oh, this bill is late. I don't know where I'm going to find the money. They have sabers in their hand. they're going to chop their heads off or they're going to drown in the sea. That is a legitimate problem, okay? No cell phones at that time to call the therapist and work it through or their spiritual counselors. No time for anything, right? And they are freaking out. Here's what is so interesting. They say this to Moses. I love this. And I love hearing this, so I know I'm not the only one who whines. When Pharaoh drew near, the people of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them, and they feared greatly. And the people of Israel cried out to the Lord. Okay, so this is you. People, all people, any people, these people, our people, people like us, cried out. They cried out and they said this to Moses, the man who freed them. Is it because there are no graves in Egypt that you have taken us away to die in the wilderness? What have you done to us in bringing us out of Egypt? Is not this what we said to you in Egypt? Leave us alone that we may serve the Egyptians. That's what they said to him, leave us alone. When he came to them and said, you're free. When the guy came down and said, let me show you the sun. They're repeating themselves. Did we not tell you, leave us alone? Leave us alone. Right? That 450 years, they are slaves. Leave us alone. And where are we in bondage and enslaved in our life? This is a hilarious story that took place thousands of years ago when read 2,000 years later in the comfort of the YMCA with my Prada boots on. I mean, hey, it's a story. It's a charming little story. But in reality, there are places in our life where we are in bondage, where we are enslaved to an addiction, to a man, to a relationship, to a set of beliefs, to a set of ideas, to a religion, to whatever it might be, to our family, to a tradition. And we are as much enslaved as they are. And what are they saying? Didn't we tell you to leave us alone? Leave us here in bondage? Leave us here as slaves? You wouldn't think that's what you say, but that's what we say. We're so afraid to go because we don't know what's on the other side. We're told on the path a million times, you're going to be led into your greatness. But you know what? At a moment like this, what does the greatness look like? Where is the greatness? I don't see it. All I see is my life is in danger. All I see is if I leave this relationship, I'll never find another man or a woman at my age. I'll never get a good job just like I had with benefits, right? I'll never get another apartment. I won't be able to live here. I won't be able to do that. I won't be able to have this. That's all we see. And with their eyes, they said it was better for us to live in Egypt. At least there we served the Egyptians and had a grave we could be buried in. Here we're in the wilderness. We don't even have food, let alone a grave. We told you, leave us alone. Understand that this is our reaction every time a turning point comes. We all go here. It's human nature. That small, frightened part of ourself says, hold on to what you have. You better hold on to what you have. And you know what life says? Life says, hold on to this moment. And we love that theoretically, hold on to this moment. But when the moment is changing and we don't know what's coming and it's unfamiliar and there are no guarantees and there are no promises, we're holding on to a handful of air. What do you mean hold on to this moment? What does that mean? And we have no control, it feels. And so we back off and say, didn't we tell you to leave me alone? Don't we say that to life? Don't we say that to other people? Leave me alone. We gave money, Carol and I tithed, to a women's organization where we live. Beautiful women's organization with all the greatest intentions that takes women, put them in a secret safe house away from the men who abuse them. Secret. It's all secret and underground. And help them. And I asked one question. I said, so what is the rate of the women going back to the men after they've gone through the program and been saved from being beaten sometimes to death? She goes, oh, well, thank you for your donation, she said, you know. But I'm sorry to say most of the women go back. And this is not about the women, and this is also not about the Israelites. This is about us. At the moment of the turning point, which calls us out of our comfort zone, calls us out of the small pot, calls us out and says there's a greater pot waiting for you, and you're going to fill it with what? With the greatness that can't come out of hiding while you're in a place that's too small. While we are constricted in bondage or fettered or compressed or constrained, our greatest self can't come out. It can't. So didn't we tell you, they said in the accent, to leave us alone that we may serve the Egyptians? For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness. Right? And so the Lord hears this cry, right? The Lord's hearing this. Because obviously, you know, there's no television back at that time, so the Lord was paying close attention to what was happening. Too many distractions now. Lord's tweeting now, so we'll never get his attention. Like, ever try and have a conversation at dinner with your goddaughter or any children that you know where they are actually present. It is just not going to happen. So I just pull out mine and I say, hey, I have friends too. I can tweet people too. So Lord is listening. What does Spirit say? What does God say? And what do we know? This God, this one mind, this heaven consciousness, we must make a decision for heaven. We must make a decision for heaven. It's such a great line from the Course in Miracles. We must make a decision. There is, and that's what we're doing in this room, and that's why you're here. It's not because you don't have better things to do on a Monday night. I get there are a thousand better things to do in New York than this. I am so sure. You're here, so when this moment comes, you'll be able to hold it in a whole different way. When these moments come, you'll know what life is telling you, and you will enter the conversation instead of whining and saying, or you might whine and then enter the conversation, but you'll know what you are dealing with. What did the Lord say? What was the response? Why are they crying out to me? I love that line. That's what God said. Why are they crying out to me? Here they are crying out between a rock and a hard place. Anybody would understand who wouldn't cry out in such a hard place. Who wouldn't cry out? There was such danger. He's saying, God saying, the Lord saying, Tao saying, one mind. The heaven consciousness is the place where we are connected to the truth. And in the truth, we ourselves know. Why are we crying out at a moment like this? What was the advice that was given in this story? Tell them. Why are they crying out to me? Tell them to move forward. That was the answer. What a piece of advice. Tell them to move forward. Tell them to move forward. That's the answer. It's like, hello, Red Sea. Are you not the all-seeing God? Can you not see we cannot move forward because the Red Sea is here? Hello. Tell them to move forward was the answer. We must make a decision, the Course in Miracles says, for heaven. We must make a decision for this expanded consciousness. We must make a decision to open our minds. We must open our consciousness. We must change our mind. We must open it and come back to our right mind, because our right mind is so far bigger than the mind that walks in this world and is frightened of every shadow around every corner. Our right mind will enable us to know that wherever we are, seemingly between a rock and a hard place, there is always, in a turning point, a place in which we're going to be grown, our good's going to come, a gift is given, and a miracle will appear. And I'm not talking about the miracle of the doves flying down. I mean the miracle that the Course in Miracles talks about, that's a shift in consciousness. Who's yours? Something fabulous comes at a turning point, but you got to put your money on the table and be in the game. You got to be in the game or you're going to miss it. And if you miss it, you don't grow bigger, you grow bitter. I do not believe that we need to listen to the wisdom of old people, because some old people just get old, right? Older does not mean wiser. It does not mean you've learned from the experience. It does not mean you've entered the conversation. You can just have survived and made it to the other side. Why are they crying out to me? Tell them to move forward. We have to make a decision. And here's what the Course says. We have to make a decision for heaven. And what does that mean? We have to decide whether we're going to put our money on the table, whether we're going to enter this conversation. We got to know that. We got to know that a change is coming, and we're going to want to play this game. We're going to want to want this change. We're going to want to welcome it. We're going to accept it. Why? Because if we don't, things get so hard in the smaller pot. It's crazy, but the smaller pot gets smaller. Whatever wasn't working doesn't work all the more. Whatever was hard gets harder. Whatever you didn't like multiplies. Why? Because things move and grow in life. And if they're not moving up, they're moving down. That's the Dalai Lama. Two directions, he said, in life. You're either moving up or you're moving down. And what the Course says is pick your direction. Which side do you want to be on? Here's what Moses said. He said it in three sentences that to me are the most fabulous three sentences you will ever need at any turning point in your life, which is why I'm starting here rather than a turning point about any specific kind of, let's tonight we'll talk about the change of life or menopause. We don't have to. What we need to talk about is when anything turns, our reaction is the same. Hold our breath, turn blue, hopes it go away, get high, drink, eat, shop, have sex with an anonymous stranger. Okay? One of those things should work to get us out of this situation, so maybe it'll be gone by morning, and of course it isn't. God, if it was gone by morning, the rooms of AA would be empty, for heaven's sakes. They wouldn't have AA, NA, DA, BA, COA. They wouldn't have all these A's. It wouldn't happen. They're filled because it doesn't work. It doesn't work. We have to make a decision that we want a consciousness so big that it is what they call the root of the word heaven expanded, that we can see what's really happening here. And that's what Moses offered them. He said these three sentences. He said, fear not, first sentence, stand still, and watch. And watch the deliverance. Whose deliverance? Your deliverance. Fear not. Stand still and watch. Don't run. Don't scream. Don't whine. Right? Don't tweet. Right? Just stay right where you are and do not fear. Because when we make a decision for heaven, what we're saying is, I want to have the consciousness that's going to show me exactly what I'm really seeing. I want to see the deeper story. I don't want to see the shadows on the cave wall. I don't want to see the story that I think I'm seeing, the Red Sea, and here are the Egyptians. I'm going to be killed this way. I'm going to be killed this way. I don't want to see that story in this moment. In this story, I want to look deeper. Why? Because something important is happening, and life is calling me to grow. That's what a turning point is. Rest assured, without fail, a turning point is calling you to grow. And we can't see that with our regular eyes because it looks like we've just been evicted from our apartment. And that doesn't look like anything I'd imagine life growing me would be. Or our body has gotten ill and betrayed us. Or our boss has fired us and betrayed us. Or our man or our woman has been with somebody else and betrayed us. That doesn't look any more like the Red Sea and the Egyptians. That place, it doesn't look like it, but it is. How do you know? Because of this line that shows up everywhere in the teachings, the ancient teachings. All of life is a movement toward our wholeness. All of it. All of it. And turning points, more so. We got to take our eyes off the wall of the shadows of the story that's happening to us. Because what are the shadows? The shadows are the story that's happening to us. To us. And when we turn around and see the fire and also see the exit, we can walk out of the cave. And what will we see? We will see the story that's happening for us. Otherwise, this kind of advice, fear not, stand still, that's horrible advice. It's horrible advice. Why are they crying to me? Tell them to move forward. That's ridiculous advice. Do you not see? Do you not have eyeballs like people have? You will see. This advice cannot help me. So there must be in this state of expanded consciousness that they call heaven, that's a state of mind. With our mind opened, we can connect, the Eastern teachings tell us, we can connect to a deeper mind, to the true mind, Carl Jung, the psychologist, said, in your mind you can connect and enter into the fluid flow of the collective unconsciousness and know everything that's ever been known. There's a place in us that knows, and it knows that it knows, the place of all wisdom. There are 1,000 names this place has been called: the still small voice, divine intuition, divine guidance, the collective unconscious, the wisdom of the ages, one mind, God's mind. And it's in you. And when you fear not and stand still, you will see that that advice that they were given was great advice. You can't run away from a turning point because the turning point has come to help you. You can't argue with the turning point of why is this happening to me, because that's the wrong question, because it's not happening to you. It's happening for you. You can't argue with why are they crying out to me. Tell them to move forward. Move forward. And you can't argue with fear not, stand still and watch. Now here's the interesting thing. In the story, the rabbis took the books of the Torah and then they studied them further and they wrote dialogue and critical thought and analysis and research of the stories. And one of the rabbis, whose name I do not remember, but I'm sure it ended with an itch or a baum or a, you know, something like that, you know. One of their wise teachings was they were told to move forward. And when did the Red Sea part? The story said the Red Sea parted when Moses lifted up his staff and invited it to part. But the rabbi said there is a different story, deeper, hidden inside of these teachings. And it was the first person to hear the call of that expanded consciousness that said, why are you crying? I'm telling you to move forward, move forward. And out of 600,000 people, one person heard, felt, got that intuitive call, because that call we know comes through every one of us. We just pretend not to hear it, but we hear it. We don't want to hear it because it's going to take us out of the smaller pot. One person heard it, and one person began to walk into the Red Sea. One person began to walk into the Red Sea. One. And he walked in, or she walked in, up to, well, the rabbis wrote it, so I'm sure they wrote it, he, I'm sure. It, had it been written by somebody who actually witnessed it, it probably was a she, okay? So it's always a he. All the great stuff's always done by guys. Okay, I get it, I get it. So they're walking into the water, they're walking into the water up to the ankles, up to the mid-calf, up to the knee, up to the mid-thigh. And what is faith? Here, let's understand something, because we're going to need to close like in 2 minutes. But we need to understand that faith is not a theory. Faith is the power that made the Red Sea part. Faith is a very real muscle that we build, and it is a muscle we build to enable us to have the power to step out into the Red Sea in our life, to step out of our job, to step out of an abusive relationship, to step out of a place where you are not seen and not heard and people do not wish you well, to step out of your own addictions that are hurting you and you can't seem to put them down. Faith is the power to step out, even if what you see in front of you seems worse than what you're leaving, because you have no idea what's going to happen and there are no guarantees. It feels like a death. Every time you leave the smaller pot, rest assured the reason you're holding on for dear life, if it feels like a part of you is literally gonna die. And that's how it feels. It feels so real. That's the story here. We're walking into something. You're leaving the smaller pot, slavery, 400 years. Leaving the pot and walking into the Red Sea, and it looks like I am so gonna die. And that's what it feels like, and that's why when the turning points come, we say, did you not hear me? Didn't I tell you, leave me alone? That's why we do that. Because there is a death involved, and it's a death of our old self. It's a death of the old way of doing things. It's a death of some certain beliefs. It might be the death of a relationship. It might be the death of the way you've been in your family as you know it. It might be the death of the way you've been in the world. Quiet and mousy when now you're being invited to come out and speak your truth. It feels like a death. And it seems like there are no promises and guarantees, but there are. Life is coming with your name on it, just like that truck had my name on it. And there was a part of me that was like, you know what? I think it's okay if I just hang out in this smaller pot. I'm really happy here doing what I've been doing for the last years. And if it's okay with you, please, didn't you hear me say, please leave me alone? Turning points is life loving you. Life loving you so much that it will not let you settle for less, no matter how much you insist on settling for less. Turning points are your very own soul, your own higher self, the infinite part of you that is infinite, whether you know it or not or believe it or not, doesn't make a difference. It is. That's that state of heaven consciousness. We must make a decision for heaven because then we know who we are. We know we're safe. In the state of heaven consciousness, expanded consciousness, we're not fooled by the shadows of the wall. We turn around and turn within and look deeply into the situation before us, and we begin with faith to walk forward. Not life is going to take care of me or God loves me because I've been a good girl and I sing in the church choir. Not that. Life's going to take care of me because life's calling me out. It's calling me out to move me from my smaller pot into my larger one. With my eyes, I can't see it because the shadows make me think something's happening to me. But if I turn around, if I take the shackles off, if I build this muscle of faith, I will soon recognize that I can walk out of this cave, look straight at the sun, and see this isn't happening to me. This is happening for me. Why? Because there came a point where life could keep that people down in slavery no longer. There comes a point where we can't take it anymore. And if we don't do it for ourselves, life, our soul, will do it for us. We'll do it through us. We'll do it as us. Not because we're being punished, because we're being loved. Not because we're being put down, but because we're being lifted up. Let me read you something in closing. The journey. This is Mary Oliver. One day, you finally knew what you had to do, and you began. Though the voices around you kept shouting their bad advice, though the whole house began to tremble and you felt the old tug at your ankles, mend my life. Each voice cried, but you didn't stop. You knew what you had to do. Though the wind pried with its stiff fingers at the very foundations, though their melancholy was terrible, it was already late enough. And a wild night, and the road full of fallen branches and stones. But little by little, as you left their voices behind, the stars began to burn through the sheets of clouds, and there was a new voice, which you slowly recognized as your own. That kept you company as you strode deeper and deeper into the world, determined to do the only thing you could do, determined to save the only life you could save. Enough said. Thank you so much for coming.